This morning I want us to study a question that actually came from one of our guests, one of our visitors a while back. And I'm always thankful for good questions and comments that come in from members and visitors alike. You may know that we keep a number of sermon request cards in the, entryway, and feel free to use those. Or I'm welcome to questions and comments that come in by email or text to my phone number on the front of the bulletin every week. But a while back, one of our guests turned in this question. Why is it a blessing to grow old, even with wrinkles and arthritis? Well, that was a very interesting question. So I've spent some time over the past few weeks looking into that, and it is purely coincidental that we are covering the idea of growing old the same week that many on Facebook are doing the 10-year challenge, where for some reason the net thing right now is to post a picture of you now and compare it to a picture of you from 10 years ago. And obviously I have not changed a bit over the last 10 years. But for those of you who might be aging, I sent out a good article with the bulletin last night. I hope all of you got that by email. If you don't get that, let me know. I'll add you to that list. We posted a link on the church's Facebook page. And we also put the hard copy in the cubby holes for those who might want it that way. But the author had some good thoughts that we won't have time to consider this morning. But today I want us to look at the passage in 2 Corinthians. And I want us to discuss this question, why is it a blessing to grow old, even with wrinkles and arthritis and all of these other things that happen to us? Dowell Flatt was one of my favorite professors down at Fried Hardeman. And Brother Flatt used to say that 2 Corinthians is one of the most neglected books in all of Scripture. I wasn't sure about that, but as he explained it, I understood why. He explained that many Bible classes will study 1 Corinthians. But then by the time they finish all 16 chapters of 1 Corinthians, nobody's in the mood to continue going into 2 Corinthians. And so the Bible class will often move on to something else. And they never get back to studying 2 Corinthians. And that makes sense to me. And I understand that. I think I've seen that happen a number of times through the years. It does seem true that 2 Corinthians is often overlooked. But today we're going to 2 Corinthians chapters 4 and 5. And this is a passage addressing some of the challenges of living in a human body. And some of the things that go wrong as we grow older and how to deal with some of that. In the first part of chapter 4, you might notice that Paul makes some contrast. He's going back and forth between a number of thoughts. And he continues this into our passage for this morning as he compares this old house that we're living in right now to the amazing reward and the new dwelling that's out there on the horizon. And so as we think about the blessing of growing old, even with these bad things that happen to us, I want us to think about what Paul says here as he compares where we are now and the body that we're in right now, and he contrasts that to where we're headed. So let's look together, please, at 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16, and we'll jump over that chapter, and we'll continue down through chapter 5, verse 10. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, starting in verse 16. Therefore we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. For we know that if the earthly tent, which is our house, is torn down, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For indeed in this house we groan, longing to be clothed with our dwelling from heaven, inasmuch as we, having put it on, will not be found naked. For indeed while we are in this tent we groan, being burdened, because we do not want to be unclothed, but to be clothed, so that what is mortal will be swallowed up by life. Now he who prepared us for this very purpose is God, who gave to us the Spirit as a pledge. Therefore, being always of good courage, and knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord, for we walk by faith, not by sight, we are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord. Therefore, we also have as our ambition, whether at home or absent, to be pleasing to him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. As we think about these words from God, I want us to apply this inspired message to the question that came in from one of our guests. Why is it a blessing to grow old, even with the things that happen to us as we age? And to do this, I want to basically use Paul's words here as our outline. You may notice in your copy of the scriptures, I looked it up in the Pew Bibles again this morning, that we seem to have three paragraphs here. And in this translation we have, and the way that they handle the formatting, the paragraphs are set aside by bold numbers. And so we have a bold verse number up there at verse 16. Then we have the chapter break, and then again in verse 6. And so these three paragraphs, that's how we'll divide our thoughts this morning. And so as Paul continues the contrast and comparisons from earlier in this chapter, he continues. He doesn't want us to lose hope. And so he gives us basically three benefits that come along with living in these earthly bodies, as imperfect and as fragile and as aging as they are. And I want us to start in chapter 4, verses 16 through 18, as Paul explains, first of all, that living in this decaying body has a way of reminding us that the inner man, the spiritual part of us, the spiritual man, is actually being renewed day by day. And so these aging bodies that we're in point to spiritual renewal, and it causes us to think about something beyond the body that we're in now. And for most of us, there is no doubt that the bodies that we're in are truly decaying. The older we get, most of us understand more clearly every day that the bodies that we are in are falling apart. We go to the doctor, and at least in my life now, I come to the doctor with a checklist of everything that hurts. I have a little thing on my phone, this is what's wrong, and this is what I need to talk to her about. And I know some of you aren't there yet. I'm there, apparently. And, you know, it kind of hurts over here when I do this. And I got this new spot on my face that's kind of concerning me. Can you look at that? And just going down the checklist like that. Then we go to the doctor. And then he or she looks us over. And then they give us a new checklist that we really weren't thinking about before. Some new things that we probably should be aware about. And I was thinking it's almost like maintaining an old car. Over time, problems start to multiply. You know, I'm driving a 2010 Subaru right now with a little over 150,000 miles on it, and bad things are starting to happen. Not terrible things, but just little things here and there that are a reminder that it's not permanent. You know, the clicker doesn't work in unlocking the front driver's side door. That's not a deal breaker, but it's a little bit irritating when you click the button and nothing happens. Got to use the actual key and all that. There is some kind of a switch deep down in the dash. I've looked it up online. I know what the problem is, but I'm not ready to tackle it. The air vent where it switches between defrost and the face and the feet, you know what I'm talking about? That doesn't work anymore, at least not consistently. So I'll turn it on defrost and it'll start hitting my face, or, you know, go to the feet and the defrost will fire up, or the really weird thing is, it continues doing this even after I shut the car off. It's making noises in there like it's trying to find where it needs to be, and that's a concerning thing. The car still works, but it's in the process of falling apart. And I think we understand that. And the same thing that happens to our cars also happens to us. I think it was my grandfather who used to say, after 50, it's just patch, patch, patch. And that was an interesting way. He had a good way of putting things. So patch, patch, patch after a certain age. And over time, the aches and the pains apparently start to catch up to us. I think I mentioned before, the first time that I ever hurt my back was during the clothing giveaway at the church down in Janesville. But it wasn't from lifting boxes. And you know what it was that did me in? It was bending over to pick up a gum wrapper on the floor. That's what did it. And I mean, you know, I can help a friend move a piano, but the gum wrapper is what did me in. And I'm like, oh no. It felt like somebody stuck an ice pick in my lower spine. Just a horrible, horrible feeling. And I remember thinking to myself then, oh no, this is what it means to get old. I was 25 when that happened. Little did I know. And I'm like, oh, I'm not used to feeling pain like this, but you know, here it is. And so over time, we may slowly lose our vision. We slowly lose our teeth. We lose our hearing. We need new hips and knees, and the heart starts to fail and bones become brittle, and on and on and on. But notice, instead of being overwhelmed and discouraged by this, I want us to notice how Paul takes this truth. And he basically uses it as a reminder to be thankful for the renewal of the inner man. It's not all about the outer man. It's not all about this body that we're in. But notice in verse 17, he continues, he explains that the momentary light affliction, that we suffer here in this life actually produces for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. I want to point out here and emphasize, he is not dismissing the affliction. He's not saying this is all in your head. This is nothing to worry about at all. He doesn't deny that we're afflicted. We are. Paul was afflicted. And if you look at this context, the context here is persecution. And so Paul had been beaten. He'd been beaten so badly by stones that they thought he was dead. They stopped when they thought he was dead and they left him there and he wasn't. He has suffered shipwreck. He spent a night and a day in the deep. I mean, just on and on. So he's not minimizing the suffering that we go through. But he's reminding us that the afflictions we suffer are actually momentary. It's actually just a very short time that we go through the pain that we go through when compared with what's coming. And so what we suffer here will not last long. It's fairly brief. It seems long when we're going through it, obviously, but in the big picture, it's not. Over the past few weeks, I would say we've been watching a show, but it hasn't been we, it's been me. There's a Netflix program, I think it is, about, it might be on Amazon Prime, but it's a helicopter trauma team from over in Yorkshire, England. And on every flight, I don't remember exactly, it's like a doctor, a pilot, and a trauma nurse. You know, and they go out to the worst accidents and all that. And a few weeks ago, they show up at a crash scene, they land in the highway, and I can't remember if it was a bicycle or a motorcycle. Somebody on some kind of two-wheeled vehicle was rear-ended, and they showed up, and this man's foot was actually beside his head. And, you know, they showed him, and he looked over, and there was his foot, and he's like, this can't be good, you know. And so the guy's kind of in shock. He can't really feel it very well right then. But apparently his thigh bone was completely broken, and it was a mess. So they assessed the situation. And I remember the doctor saying to the man, what we're about to do is going to hurt. It's going to hurt a whole lot, but it's going to be very brief. And I kind of thought about that as we were looking at this passage here this morning. That seems to be what Paul is saying here. What we suffer in this life, it's real. And we hurt. And bad things happen. The body fails. Things fall apart. But it's temporary. And that's what we're looking forward to. We're looking to what comes after this. Not only do we just endure the decaying of the outer man, notice here also he reminds us that the decay and suffering actually point us to something better. And that's the thought here in the last few verses of chapter 4. He points us to something better. Hardship makes us stronger. Maybe we endure some level of pain at the gym, and we put ourselves through that because we know there's some benefit to it. And that seems to be what we find in verse 18. He encourages us not to look at the things which are seen, but look at the things that are not seen. And so as the outer man decays, don't focus on the outer man. We don't focus on the suffering and decay, but we focus on the inner man. And we focus on the things that are spiritual, this renewal, the spiritual renewal that's going on the inside. The human eye is rather interesting in that we cannot really focus clearly on more than one thing at a time. I don't know if you've thought about that, but, you know, if I hold my finger out and I focus on my fingerprint, you know, this is clear. Of course, with bifocals, I have to kind of, you know, tilt it up a little bit now. But you focus on this and all of you are kind of blurry. And we understand how that works. We can only focus on one thing at a time. And I think I mentioned before, back when my grandfather was preaching, he measured the distance from his eyes to the pulpit and had an identical pair of glasses made with just the reading part. And so instead of preaching with bifocals, he had one set of glasses for distance and then he had another set, and they were the same frame, so nobody would know. And I remember looking at him, I remember he told us about this, so I remember paying close attention. You know, during the song before the sermon, when the preacher's sitting up here somewhere, I would look over and he would swap out his glasses. He would take out the one, he would put on these. And he explained that when he walked into the pulpit, the only thing that he could see was his notes. He couldn't see any of you. And he told us, nervousness totally went away. I didn't know anybody was there. You know, because he was only looking at what he had right in front of him, his Bible or whatever. But I say this just to illustrate that we choose what we focus on in this life. And Paul here is saying, focus on the spiritual renewal. What we're going through physically, the pain that we suffer, that's temporary. So focus not on what is seen in verse 18, but focus on what is not seen. And the reason is what we see in the world around us is temporary, including these bodies we are in. If we see it, it won't last. So we're focusing on really what we can't see, the unseen, the spiritual. And so instead of getting distracted by the bodies we're in, instead of getting distracted by the aches and the pains and the wrinkles and arthritis, as the question was worded, we focus instead on the renewal that's happening inside of us. Now, I look around this room, and I don't have the glasses my grandfather had, so I see some bodies that are failing. But I also see some senior saints who are incredibly strong, spiritual giants who are doing some amazing things for the Lord. Some men and women who are being renewed day by day, just as Paul refers to here. And so here at the beginning, then, we find we don't lose heart. That's his point. Because our failing bodies actually give us opportunities for spiritual renewal. This happens when we focus not on what's temporary, but on what is eternal. A failing body pushes us towards spiritual renewal if we choose to go in that direction. There's a second big idea, comes in chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. And that is, our failing bodies remind us that we're looking forward to new bodies. And notice, starting in verse 1, Paul compares our earthly bodies to a tent. And he makes the point that this tent that we are living in right now is in the process of being torn down. Some of the commentaries I was looking at point out that the Greek word that he uses there is actually the word for breaking camp. And that's interesting to me. You know, when you're done camping and it's time to wake up and get everything put away, sometimes we might refer to breaking camp. That's the word that he uses. Our bodies are in the process of being broken down and put away and packed away not to be needed again. And he says, when this tent is torn down, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. And so Paul is making a contrast between a tent and an actual building. And I think most of us know what it means to live in a tent. And we did not plan this, but the class this morning, we talked about the tent, didn't we? God's people had the Ark of the Covenant in a tent. They lived in tents as they traveled through the wilderness. It was meant to be portable. Most of us have lived in a tent from time to time, maybe a few days in a row, maybe a week or two at the most. Many of us do it for fun, which some of you will never understand and have no desire to do that, and I understand that. But to get away a little bit or to relax. Someone has suggested that camping is what happens when you spend hundreds of dollars to live like a homeless person. And some of you understand that. And yet for some reason we continue to live in tents. We know the advantages. Tents are lightweight. You can take them with you. They're portable. You can set them up almost anywhere. A tent can provide shelter. And the tent up here is the one I taped to the deck of the ocean-going ferry for 3.5 days up in Alaska. And it served me well. And I didn't put up the rain fly. The rain fly helps. You don't want to be in the rain when it's set up like this. But this is just the size of it, so you know. I have a larger version of this tent that we use at our Bible camp up near Eau Claire. Aaron and I camp out in the woods to get away from the children overnight at camp. And yet we also know that tents have limitations, don't they? They aren't perfect. They aren't a great place to live on a long-term basis. After a storm followed our family around Lake Superior for about a week when I was growing up, we finally got sick and tired of spending all day drying out the gear at the laundromat the next morning. Tents today are a lot better than the tents that we had 30 years ago, especially in the rain. I've not had a drop of water in any of my tents over the past 10 years or so. I mean, it's different materials. It's a different design, better stuff that they're made of. But anyway, one morning in Wawa, Ontario, the guy in the camper across from us had to call out for help. The authorities had to come and get him out. Fire, rescue, everything. His camper was completely surrounded by water. It was like his camper was the island and surrounded by water. He had a wooden leg that he couldn't get wet, and rescuers had to lay a plank across the water so the guy could get out without getting his leg wet. That's just weird, you know. And here we are in our tent as a family, you know. Oh, look at that, you know. Firefighters, there's a plank. And I was thinking this week, when your campground starts looking like a scene from a pirate movie, you know, that's when it's time to that's when it's time to pack it up, you know, and this is over. And I think my dad packed the tent in the back of the car wet, which we don't do, but we were done with it. You know, that was it. And we went to a motel in Wawa, Ontario, and his theory now is the world's worst hotel room is better than the world's best tent. And I'm not quite there yet, but I've been in some bad hotel rooms, and I've had some good tents, but maybe I'll get there sometime. But I think we see the advantages of an actual building over a tent, don't we? As much as we love camping, there are some advantages to having an actual building. A building offers better protection from animals and the weather. A building provides better security. It's easier to defend an actual building than sleeping in a tent thinking that you're safe in the middle of nowhere. A building will generally last longer than a tent, and so on and so on. And I say this looking at this passage with the realization of what the Apostle Paul did for a living. when he wasn't preaching full time. Do you remember that? Paul was a tent maker. And so here he is talking about tents. He knows what he's talking about. And he compares the human body to one of these tents that perhaps he himself helped to build. But notice he's making a point here. In this tent, the human body, he says that we groan. And he uses that word twice in this paragraph. In this tent, in this earthly body, we groan. And we groan longing for something better. And so maybe we have the picture of maybe camping in the rain. And we're cold, and maybe we're getting harassed by raccoons or something like that. And the lightning is striking around us, and the wind is blowing. And as we're laying there a little bit miserable, we're kind of longing for something better. Looking forward to being home. Getting back to my own bed where it's totally dry and all that and warm. You know, looking forward to something different. In terms of our question today, it seems that growing old then might be something of a reminder that there is something so much better for us on the horizon. This body that we're in is like the tent. It's temporary. It's in the process of being broken down and packed away. And there's a time coming when we will take off this tent just like we might take off an old piece of clothing. And when we do, notice what Paul says in verse 4. What is mortal will be swallowed up by life. But for now, though, we groan. For now, we groan whenever we bend down to pick up a gum wrapper or whatever it is that does you in. For now, we groan as we go through surgery after surgery after surgery, as some of you have been through, just over and over again. For now, we groan as we say goodbye to those who are closest to us, our loved ones, our friends, people the same age or even younger than we are. In the meantime, though, we have God's Spirit as a pledge. Notice that in verse 5, as a down payment, as a reminder of what's coming. As we think about what he writes here, we need to ask ourselves, I think, whether we're really groaning as we should. Do we really groan in this body? Are we kind of tired of it in a sense? I hope we are. And I don't know about you. It's very easy to be a little bit too at home down here, a little bit too comfortable. I got a nice house. I'm fairly healthy. Life is good. I'm going to enjoy it. And then we tend to forget about the spiritual stuff. And so we need to be groaning and remembering that this body is very temporary. In my opinion, this is probably more of a problem for those who have not yet injured themselves by sneezing. Have you hurt yourself by sneezing? Some of you are nodding your heads. You know, you get to a point where you sneeze and bad things happen. You know, throw your back out or whatever. And so something better is coming. You know, we're just in a temporary location down here. So what does this mean for us? It means we need to be careful not to live our lives right now as if we're at home. We're not at home. This isn't our home. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. I think that's one of our songs that we're getting ready to sing a little bit later in this service. We need to remember this body is a tent. This is not my permanent dwelling. I'm only passing through this place. So first of all, the trouble we have with this old house actually leads to spiritual renewal if we allow it. And secondly, the trouble we have with our earthly dwelling also serves as a reminder that we're looking forward to a new and improved, a spiritual permanent home. This body's only a tent. And so we certainly expect that we will have some trouble with it. And all of this leads us to a third benefit of body trouble. We find it in verses 6 through 10 as Paul uses these issues to remind us that we are not yet at home with the Lord. I don't know how many of you have had the privilege of picking out cemetery plots with your parents. I've had that. It's an interesting and just surreal experience. We buried my brother-in-law there at Oak Hall Cemetery, just off of Highway M in Fitchburg. I don't know, some of you went down to Vince Alexander. He was buried there a very cold day back in January. But that is, if I die this morning, my wife doesn't hide my body somewhere, if I'm going to be buried, that's probably where I'll end up. But there's an old section in that cemetery with some graves from the mid-1800s. So the city of Fitchburg bought that little cemetery, then they expanded it, and so it's maintained well. You know, Fitchburg is responsible for it. And my dad and I were walking through there several years ago, scoping it out. And my dad and I found an old, old tombstone from the mid-1800s. And there was a reference on there to Psalm number 73. I want to read two verses from Psalm 73. I don't remember ever seeing that psalm before. And I'm sure I have, because I've read through the Bible. So my eyes have touched that passage, if you know what I mean. But I'd never thought about it in this way, but so appropriate for a tombstone. It's Psalm number 73, verses 25 and 26. Psalm 73, 25, and 26. Whom have I in heaven but you? And besides you, I desire nothing on earth. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Isn't that a neat verse to put on a tombstone? And that's still there after 150 or whatever so years. That's what Paul is saying here. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart. He is my portion forever. And so when my flesh fails, I know I'm going home to be with the Lord. And so in a sense, the trouble that we have with our earthly bodies causes us to be homesick. If we accept it in the way that God intended it, the trouble we have causes us to be homesick. So as this body fails, I want to go home. I don't want to be here anymore. And I realize that I'm absent from the Lord in verse 6. Things are not okay with this body. And so as this body wears out, we get more and more homesick. As a result, notice Paul says that we are to walk by faith, not by sight. So the answer to a fragile body then is to walk by faith. How does the world around us deal with body failure? Well, they look to technology and science, new and improved health care, medicine. And we're thankful for those advances. We talked about this Wednesday evening. We're thankful for new knees and transplants and all of the surgeries that we're able to have. But we also understand science and medicine can only delay the inevitable. They can't stop what we know will happen. And so the benefit to getting old then is that we get more and more homesick for heaven. And that brings us to Paul's conclusion. Notice again in verses 9 through 10, what does this mean for us? Verses 9 and 10. Therefore, we also have as our ambition, whether at home or absent, to be pleasing to Him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad. So knowing that this tent is failing, I need to do whatever it takes to live a life right now that's pleasing to God. And I live this way knowing that there is a day of judgment out there on the horizon. That's not a popular thing to think about. People will avoid that thought. They'll do anything they can to avoid it. All of us are getting older. There are some benefits. As the outer man decays, the inner man grows stronger. As the old tent falls apart, we look forward to the new and permanent dwelling. And then finally, as this old house deteriorates, we get more and more homesick, longing to be with Him. I'm so thankful for this question that led to today's lesson. As we close, I want to share some good news about an older woman who was baptized just a few years ago. Her name is Lula Wallace, and she was baptized at the age of 108. She passed away not long after this happened. She passed away at the age of 109, which is absolutely amazing. But the article in the Christian Chronicle a number of years back when this happened explained that her daughter, Margaret Cook, 78 years old herself, continually prayed that her mother, Lula, would someday obey the gospel. So Margaret went to visit her mother, eventually got to study the Bible with her, sitting down there on the end of her bed. And so Lula finally decided that she was ready. They live in Mississippi, just over the state line from Tennessee. And so they drove up to Memphis, and they met a distant cousin, John DeBerry. I don't know, some of you may be familiar with Brother John DeBerry. He is a gospel preacher. He's also a Tennessee state representative. And I've heard John speak a number of times through the years. And I would say John is one of the only politicians that I would happily vote for if I ever had the opportunity. Just an amazing man, also a gospel preacher. But they drove up there, and two of Lula's grandsons carried their grandmother in her wheelchair down into the water. And they baptized her at the church building up in Memphis. And I share this by way of encouragement that as long as we are still alive, as long as we are still in this earthly body, we have the ability to turn to God in saving faith. Do not wait until you are 108. I don't know anybody who's lived that long. Don't wait that long. But if you're ready to walk by faith and not by sight this morning, we want to help you with that. Jesus died for us. He now commands that we turn from sin and that we allow ourselves to be immersed in water for the forgiveness of our sins. If you have any questions about that whatsoever, let us know. And we want to study with you. But if you're ready to obey the gospel right now, we want you to know that heaven will surely be worth it all. We're looking forward to something amazing after this life. Come talk to me now as we sing this next song. Let's all stand and sing.